did you find this?
Oh, Craig, so loud.
All right, so check this out. So I go to the local AA affiliate baseball game on Wednesday. Wiener Wednesday.
I thought they weren't affiliated.
I think they are. I think they're AA.
I looked it up. They were like Frontier League or something.
You guys are making this shit up. Like, this is not real.
Whatever. It was Wiener Wednesday. I mean, that's all that matters.
And the other team had a guy on their team whose first name was Blaze and his last name was Brothers.
Oh, that's so sick.
Hell yeah.
Blaze Brothers. And there's a player on the Chicago Dogs whose name is General MacArthur.
Yes.
Hell yeah. So I'm reading the rosters and I'm like, do they just let dudes come up with their own fucking names for this shit or what?
That's got to be like his stage name or...
and I did some Googling while I was there. Apparently, like, that level of baseball, those dudes make between like 59 and 90K a year, which is dope.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I mean, I was afraid they were making like $14,000 a year. You know what
or
I mean?
Like, or like nothing, right?
I think the league minimum for minor league baseball is like 30 grand.
Okay.
Dude, that's living a dream.
Yeah, for sure. That's like my band put out one moderately successful album and we're going to go tour for the next 11 months. Try to make some money back on it. Ryan, you're back. It's good to have you. We're glad you're here.
Had a good vacation. Caught some good fish.
Yeah. Hung out with the wink.
Got 26-inch walleye. My PB, my personal best walleye.
Hell yeah.
That's sick. That's crazy.
Yeah, and that's big for walleye too. Generally, they don't get very much bigger than like 30 inches. So that's a pretty big fish.
A fish, general walleye.
To change the subject though, another thing I heard today, which is freaking awesome for me and Tony, Hard Knocks, Chicago Bears.
My biggest fear is that they're gonna look like fucking idiots.
Are you guys going to gatekeep when the Chicago Bears are good? Be like, no, you cannot be a fucking fan of this team.
No way, baby. There's always room on the broom.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm always down to party. If you want to like the Bears, come let me show you YouTube videos of some of the most heartbreaking losses that I've had to endure. But like, dude, like, fuck it. Who cares? Like what you like.
I hope it's not cursed. Because obviously it was cursed for the Jets last year.
You know what, dude? They're still cursed because I saw a video today of Aaron Rodgers grabbing at his ankle, and I was like, "God is real."
What,
dude? They showed him doing some practice stuff. He's definitely still limping.
That's bullshit too, because he was like in week 10 of last year. He's like, "I'm ready to play."
He should have.
Yeah, I wish he would have played too. That would have been fucking awesome.
Ended his career.
Get on out there. All right, so we got bits, we got research to do, we got time to fucking chill. So, Ryan, welcome back. Start us off, baby.
All right, guys. So I went with a player that is on the team that I'm, or was formerly on the team that I'm profiling today. So let's talk a little bit about beast mode. Let's go talk about Marshawn Lynch. All right.
Yes.
A man who will be in the Hall of Fame. I think he's eligible next year or maybe the year after that.
Dude, time moves quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. What was last year was 19, right? Maybe 20. He was on the Raiders in 19.
Yeah.
Or no, he came back. You know, he came back. He was on the Raiders and then he came back. Remember when like.
For Seattle.
Yeah, when three of their backs went out and they were like, screw it, let's just bring Marshawn back and he played.
Yep. You know who his college quarterback was, right?
Bo Nix?
No.
No, Aaron Rodgers.
For real?
Yeah,
I did not know that.
They both went to Cal.
Hell yeah. Well, yeah, Marshawn Lynch is from Oakland native, still does a lot of like charity work in that area. Grew up out there. Really quick, let's just go over, like, we don't really need to talk about, you know, where he grew up or anything like that. Everyone knows who he is. But let's just rattle off some, like, franchise, Seattle Seahawks franchise records really quick.
Step porn, let's go.
Most rushing attempts in the playoffs, 211. Most rushing attempts in the playoff season, 65. That was in 2013. Was that the year? Is that the year they went to the Super Bowl? I can't remember.
I don't know.
I can't remember. Let's see. Most rushing yards in a playoff career, 970. Most rushing yards in a playoff season, 318. That was the year after the 2013 season. That was 2014. Most rushing yards per attempt, a minimum of 10 carries in a playoff game, 6.89. And that was in 2011 against the New Orleans Saints. Most rushing touchdowns in a game, he had 4. That was against the New York Giants in 2014. That's tied with Kurt Warner and Sean Alexander. Not Kurt Warner, the famous quarterback. Kurt with a C, Warner.
Yeah.
Must be old. Let's see. Most rushing touchdowns in a playoff career, 12. Most rushing touchdowns in a playoff season was 4. Most rushing yards per game in the playoffs, 106. These are all like playoff records. That's crazy.
Well, you know what's funny is he said he had 211 career attempts in the playoffs. You know, they would have a whole nother Super Bowl if he had 212 attempts.
That's true. That's true.
Pete Carroll's an idiot.
Throughout his career, he amassed over 10,000 yards, 85 touchdowns on the ground, and 9 touchdowns from receiving passes.
Okay.
Yeah, off of 287 receptions. Let's see. In the postseason, he had 12 total rushing touchdowns, no passing touchdowns. He's famous for his stuff on the field and off the field. Everyone says, Lynch says that Beast Mode, his name was given to him, I think, in college. But the year when it really became like everyone started calling that was when Transformers came out with Beast Wars. So
yeah, who knows? Fair enough. Fair enough.
Who knows if it was made up before that or not? Only Lynch knows. Let's see. He had the, what was the earthquake game, Tony?
The Beastquake.
The Beastquake. Yeah. That was his longest career run. I think it was like 78 yards.
That was so sick.
I thought he might have had a run that was longer than that, but it turns out that was his longest, was 78 yards. He does a lot of charity work and helps out his family in the Oakland area, which I think is really cool because I've actually seen it firsthand. I doubt Shane has seen it, but Tony might have seen it. He did a couple episodes of Bar Rescue because he had his own bar. He still has to this day his own bar in the Oakland area, and basically his entire family runs it. And John Taffer came in and just like shut them all down,
And that's why he loves Fridays, right? It's because he's like, you know what, dude, I can't go here. I'll go to Fridays.
The family, obviously, you know, whether they were taking advantage of the situation or just because it was a family atmosphere, you know, people weren't, I don't know necessarily if they weren't taking their jobs seriously enough or they just didn't have enough experience, but Taffer shut them down. And Marshawn Lynch sat them all down, sat all his family members down, and and explained to them what they needed to do to help out the, you know, this bar that they were all part of. And what I thought was really cool was the family was all, none of them gave like backlash or anything. I think Taffer just set them in the moment and they realized, hey, you know, if I want to continue living off my cousin's teat, I better suck it up and start making this bar. And they turned it around. They turned it around and the bar's still there today. It's a great episode. If you guys ever want a good watch, it's a good 45-minute episode. I caught it like a couple months ago. I wasn't trying to look for it. It just was on. I thought that was really cool. He's had a few legal troubles. Let's see. In 2008, he pled guilty to a hit and run charge. Had his driver's license revoked. Let's see. He was driving his 2008 Porsche Cayenne at 3:30 a.m. through Buffalo's Bar District when he struck a woman in the street and failed to stop. When he was questioned, Lynch stated, "I didn't know my car hit anyone or anything." So,
you know what, dude? At least he's consistent of running people over.
I don't know if he had any alcohol in his system, but Marshawn Lynch is a big proponent for marijuana and using it throughout his career to help with recovery from injuries and stuff like that. He actually has, I don't know if it's his like own strain, and he does a bunch of stuff in the cannabis industry. I think he does have his own strain.
Hell yeah.
And it's probably called something with Skittles.
Purple.
You know, he was famous. He was famous for eating Skittles during the middle of games, and actually got like Skittles actually came out after like he first started doing that, and they made like his own personal like dispenser in his locker and gave him 2 years worth of free Skittles.
Hell yeah.
I'm sure he still gets free Skittles
to this day, but at the time, lifetime supply. What are you losing out on?
Well, like at the time I was like, when I read it, I was like, just 2 years? I was like, give this man Skittles for the rest of his life. But
it's fucking corn syrup. It's not that complicated.
Yeah. True. Right. Oh, he actually does have a DUI or suspicion of DUI in Vegas. And this was actually recently. This was like 2 years ago.
Yeah. Did you ever see the video? It's fucking hilarious.
No.
Look, I'm not going to make light of people who get drunk and drive. Like, that's not smart. But, like, yeah, there's, like, footage of him during that DUI arrest, and he's fucking hilarious.
Hell
yeah. So that's our boy.
He was also, you know, notoriously famous for not wanting to talk to the media. What was that year? He was fined, like, 50 grand. 2013? When he just basically got up there and he was like, I'm just here because I have to be. What was that famous answer he could just kept saying?
I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm just here so I don't get fined. That was like his response to every, it was a great interview.
Yes. I think that was like pre-Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was Mike Ben right up going into that Super Bowl, yep.
Yeah.
Ludacris actually has a music video called Beast Mode.
Let's go.
With Marshawn Lynch. Yeah, but just all around, like, you know, he's had some legal troubles like most famous people, but nothing crazy. And I really like that he is all about his community, especially in Oakland, because Oakland has just been ravaged by the economy and there's not too much there anymore. And it's, from what I hear, I don't know if Shane knows anything about the Frisco area, but Oakland's supposed to be really bad.
I think it's gotten better over the years, but also I don't know how good it can be considering how like every team is leaving.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. throughout the 80s, 90s and early 2000s, I think a lot of the industry left, the area for, you know, other places that are cheaper to make things. And I think it just is one of those situations, like a lot of towns in America, where it just has become not a ghost town, but just there's no jobs. So anyone that's living there tends to be lower income.
It's basically like Tech Haven, but everybody like either drives through or they like live there, but don't participate in the community. I think that's what it's like.
Sure.
I'm not 100%. Sure. I don't ever go up Northern California. So
I also want to say something you didn't mention was that in that show that everyone told me to watch, that was like, it was okay. Where, like, it's all improv and Will Arnett's a detective and his partner every episode is a different celebrity. His episode of that with Marshawn Lynch was the best one.
That's because Marshawn Lynch is actually, like, genuinely funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was in, like, two episodes. Yeah.
Yeah, his name was Octavius Shitwagon.
That's right. Yep. Oh, my God, I forgot about that name.
That was a good one.
He's also a big part of Seattle, like, still, too. Like, he owns part of the Seattle Kraken, the NHL team.
No shit.
I'm sure he's just a minority owner. He doesn't own a lot, but he's part of that.
He's no Antonio Brown.
His own charitable foundation is called the Family First Foundation. He started that in 2006, still running to this day. And it's all about giving back to Oakland. All around great guy. Does a lot of things. He's got like 15 or something like between TV and film credits. Still does a lot of stuff for someone who was really didn't speak too much during his playing career. He just figured, I think his mindset was, look, I'm going to do my talking with my actions on the field. And that's what he did. He was just fucking awesome.
Well, he also realized like everything could be a sound clip, right? No matter what he does, it's going to be spun in some way. So he's like, why do I got, I don't know. I don't think players should have to talk to the media either. I think it's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, half the time, what are you just saying? Give 110%.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Like, why do we need to hear that over and over? But yeah, this guy, all around great guy. I loved watching him play as someone who started watching football, like seriously, like, I don't know, 15 years or so. That was like the beginning of his career. So he's a big part of the start of like my fantasy football watching and playing career. Great player to watch. Great personality too. So yeah, that's Mr. Marshawn Lynch.
Hell yeah, beast mode. We have a recurring segment that we've kind of neglected over the last couple of weeks, but it parlays into Shane's bit this week.
We're merging two worlds. We're talking actually three worlds. My team this week, the Giants, music, which we did too long yesterday, last episode about, and motherfucking Darren Waller.
There he is.
Okay.
Cause Darren Waller dropped a single today and God, is it awful.
Yeah, what he does music?
Apparently. That's what he's been doing when he is injured the whole season.
Well, do you know the name of the single, Shane?
I dropped it in the Discord. I can try to find the
I'm sure if I just look up Darren Waller single.
It's also fucking 3 minutes long. Nothing of value being said. I thought it was AI generated when I first listened to it. I was like, okay.
Is it like hip hop or is it R&B or what is it?
It's like SoundCloud mumble auto-tune rap. Is that how you would describe it, Tony?
He uses auto-tune. God damn it.
Everyone uses auto-tune. Okay, so I described it sounding like a Post Malone B-side.
That's what it sounds like to me. But like way fucking worse, right? Like I'm not even like a Post Malone defender, but it's like, okay, I'm gonna say right off the rip, I'm really disappointed that Darren Waller and Kadarius Toney were not on the same team at the same time, because I would love to hear a collab between the two of these guys.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god.
I'll say this, Ryan, it's a breakup song, because you know he's getting divorced.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And
he's retiring from the Giants, so that has something to do with it too.
Yeah, at the end of the song he's like, shout out Daniel Bellinger.
Oh, but, my God. I was so mad at you in the draft when you took him, too. I was so pissed. Because I was going to take him in the following round.
I knew that song was coming out. I had to get in early.
Damn it.
The thing that made me laugh the most about the song is not the auto-tune, but it's that at the beginning of the song, he's talking, and there's still auto-tune on that part of the vocal track. Like, it
my
would
name
not...
is Darren Waller.
I mean, like, it's Ryan, I can't wait to for you to experience it. It's gonna be a lot of fun. You'll have to give us your review next week. Shane, what else you got on this Darren Waller song?
It was basically like, take your time to heal, and I'm like, hey, you know what, dude, I'm really glad he like walks his talk and his music as well as his performance on the football field, because he definitely takes his time to heal, right? So I'm just like, hey,
oh yeah,
it's good. I mean, there's nothing like of note to talk about like severely. It was this where I was gonna talk about LT's criminal history and like how he's a caricature of like if Antonio Brown was like actually self-aware. But yeah, it's very interesting for the fact that it exists, and the fact of if he's trying to like make a career pivot or listen, I'm going to say something controversial here. I think everybody as a hobby should make beats, right? Because one day an NFL player or an athlete is going to come to you and ask you if you can make him a beat. And you can ask for $50,000. And you don't got to do a goddamn thing, but give him the beat and let him talk for an hour into the microphone and just chop it up.
Well, shit.
I'm with it.
I never thought of it like that.
I'm with it. I need to listen to Cole Beasley's music. I think it'd be really fun.
No, you don't.
It's going to put you on a watch list. We already say controversial shit enough. I don't want to put one more thing on your list.
The next Killdozer will be driven by someone listening to Cole Beasley's rap music.
No.
Yeah, it was definitely a nightmare listening to that song.
It's like the Morbius of music, right? Where like you got to watch it, but then you forget about it as soon as it's over.
I appreciate that it exists because I think everyone should make art regardless of whether or not it turns out good. I think you should make art.
And regardless of whether or not, like you said, it's good or whether you think it's good. It should be just for you, you know?
Yeah. And so don't ever release it to the public, please. Just keep that shit to yourself. I will never promote my band's music on here. Keep that shit to myself because I'm an adult.
Bury it deep down like the real man you are.
Yes.
Just share it with your friends on WhatsApp.
All right. Shane, you got anything else?
That's it, man. I gave everybody the inkling of, hey, here's 3 minutes of real life you're never going to get back. Oh, there's also owls in the song, which I thought was a really bad look given like the whole Kendrick Lamar Drake beef where I'm like, hey, owls kind of just got shit on. So maybe like, don't put that into your song. I don't know.
Is he using it as like a metaphor? Like I only hunt at night.
I don't think he's that deep. Okay. I think you're giving him a little.
He probably doesn't even know that they're nocturnal.
The I'm Darren Waller and this is deep subreddit is blowing up right now.
Oh my God.
All right. So I want to fit my guy in this week with the theme, with my Washington Football Commanders theme. So we're going to profile a kicker today who has one outstanding fact about him and a bunch of smaller, weird, somewhat interesting things. So today we're going to talk about a guy by the name of Mark Mosley.
Mark Mosley.
He was sucked from the infinite ether into this world in 1948 in Laneville, Texas. He was a quarterback in high school and college. He played for Texas A&M. Shout out for our buddy Hunter. Go Aggies.
Oh, yeah.
And then Stephen F. Austin University. His senior, his senior season, he went from quarterback to kicker. And
of course he did.
That's the position he'd play.
He must have been real bad.
Yes. So he gets drafted in the 14th round of the 1970 NFL draft by the Philadelphia Eagles. He gets cut after 1 year and then plays two seasons in Houston before getting cut there as well. He goes back home and works installing sewage systems and practices his kickoffs with his kids. And in the most boomer shit I've ever heard in my life, he was writing letters to teams to try to get a gig in the league again.
Oh, dude.
Really?
I do. I love his dad's advice. Just apply.
Yeah, just send him a letter. Just go. I know it says apply online, but like, just go in person.
Yeah. You'll never know if you don't ask.
So actually he gets a tryout in 1974 with Washington and he makes the team. Even at this time, he was like an old school guy. He was the only guy in the league as of 1982 that kicked as a straight on style of place kicker. By the time he was drafted, the league had started to shift towards what we see today, which is the soccer style approach where the kicker lines up a couple steps to the left or right.
So what you're saying is he was like kicking with his toe instead of the side of his foot.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I mean, sometimes guys do say you get more power from that. It's a harder surface, I guess, but I don't know.
So you got to wear a special shoe with a slightly upturned toe that's like hard as shit.
Okay. Almost like a steel toe thing.
Probably. So he's a kicker, but he's not really a great one. He's routinely like a 60 to 70% success rate kicker, which that was okay in the 70s and 80s, but there's no fucking way a kicker would last in the NFL kicking 70%.
Yeah, you get fired like the first month.
Yep. Before 1982, Mosley only had one season with a better than a 75% field goal rate. But in 82, he caught fucking fire. From 81 through the 82 season, he made 23 field goals in a row, breaking the NFL record. So he ends the year 20 of 21 with a 95% field goal percentage. Now, the 1982 season, if you remember, was the strike-shortened season. So the league had scabs in Sean Payton for several weeks. And as a result of this strike, no running backs hit 1,000 yards, and every quarterback played like a Bears quarterback, which means nobody had more than 3,000 passing yards. So,
oh my God.
As a result of this, Mark Mosley was selected to be the 1982 NFL's most valuable player. A kicker.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
That rules.
As of this day, he is the only pure special teams guy to win the award, because a few guys won in the 50s when kicking was like part of their game. Like, they were also quarterbacks, running backs, but they kicked too. But since then, outside of Mosley, only Justin Tucker has ever received an MVP vote in a season. He got one fifth place vote in 2017.
And that was Evan.
So even though Washington would end up winning the Super Bowl that season, Mosley didn't help. He missed four field goals in the playoffs. Just fun stuff. The rest of his career wasn't especially noteworthy, but when I was reading stuff about his career, every once in a while, I would see something that would say, like, he made the game-winning overtime field goal versus whoever after missing three earlier in the game. Damn, dude. Must be nice.
If he just would have showed up to work, we wouldn't be in this position, homie.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
nah, he did it on purpose. He knew he was going to get that game-winning field goal.
Got to make it interesting.
But, like, regardless, he was literally the MVP of the NFL, this fucking guy. He retires in 1986 with a career field goal percentage of 65%.
Oh my God.
His after football life is kind of weird too. He starts franchising two stores and then eventually becomes the director of franchising for Five Guys.
Damn, so, dude. He's a billionaire.
So when you pay too much for a burger, you can blame Mark Mosley.
I was going to say, I haven't been to a Five Guys in probably since before COVID, but now I probably am going to go.
They're pretty much the same price as any other fast food restaurant now, so you might as well get a better quality burger.
True.
I just remember, I remember it being expensive, but like, you got to take advantage of that. Yeah, it's expensive if you're a dork and you like your cheeseburgers with just ketchup and mustard. You got to get all those free toppings that are with
That's
it.
That's true. Dude, and you get unlimited peanuts?
Right.
That's half the value.
And like, when you order a thing of fries, they just fill up your entire bag of fries.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a small or a large. You get a bag.
Yeah, you got to learn how to, you can't just go there and be like, I have a child's palate and I just want a cheeseburger with ketchup and mustard. No, you got to get bacon. You got to get lettuce. You got to get tomato. You got to get the onion rings. Oh man, come on. You got to take advantage of that.
The things Ryan cares about in life, sports and fucking cheeseburger discourse.
And also, I mean, let's be real. When you're done, you clean yourself off with some dude wipes.
That's true, dude. And then you use your TH Fantasy promo code for HelloFresh. And then you give that to somebody else to get more Five Guys.
On a less Five Guys related note, his sister was murdered. Yeah.
Oh no.
What a great transition, Tony.
Thank you.
Right after our ad read.
Thank you. That serial killer ended up being the focus of the Supreme Court's ruling in Perry versus Lina, which states that executing people with intellectual disabilities does not qualify as cruel and unusual punishment. Fucking yikes.
Wow.
Which is also weird, too, because I've never heard of that serial killer, and I absorb a lot of true crime.
There you go. So before you feel too bad for Mosley, he was one of the loudest and most vocal supporters of the Washington Football Organization, keeping a racial slur as the name of their franchise. So, before we leave, let me hit you with two I'm a real piece of shit quotes here by our boy Mark. Oh, quote God. One, if we start changing, then we're attacking my amendment rights that I have. To me, the name is not something that offends anybody.
Oh my God.
Shut up, white guy.
Oh, speaking of, I got a good one for you right here. This is the biggest dumbass quote of the story. Quote, if it was Indians, then I would be concerned. but everyone that said anything to me has been a white man or a black man. No red men have said anything derogatory to me about it.
That's because we killed them all, you dumbass.
Yeah. I was going to say, how many has he ever even spoken to a Native American?
Probably not. Probably not.
All right.
So that's the story of NFL MVP, Five Guys Corporate Stooge, and outright idiot Mark Mosley.
Wow.
Fuck him.
There he is. Wow.
Jesus.
Yeah, so real roller coaster type of dude.
You know what, dude? Kickers don't matter, right?
That's true.
This fucker, Justin Tucker's cool. He's fine. But Harrison Butker, bro, fuck him. We don't need the position anymore.
Yeah, right? So
they should just let Travis Kelce kick the field goals.
Why not?
For Chiefs.
Let it ride, baby. Touchdowns are bust. It's research season, Ryan. Time to dust off your cobwebs. And when you're ready, tell us a little bit about the 2024 Seattle Seahawks.
All right, guys. Yeah, Seahawks this year. All right, we got not too much changes in the roster, but we got some pretty big changes in terms of coaching. We are out of the Pete Carroll era. All right.
Peace.
No more Pete Carroll. They picked up an interesting coach. So the new head coach this year is Mike McDonald. He doesn't have any head coaching experience before this, but he was most recently the Ravens defensive coordinator last year. And let's see, last year, that defense, they finished ranked number one in each of the following categories. Points allowed, 16.5 points per game. Sacks with 60, and takeaways 31, tied with the Giants. The year before that, he just did, or maybe it was a couple years before that, he was with the University of Michigan. But other than that, before that, he was with the Ravens pretty much for like the previous like 10 years as in some type of defensive thing. I think it was like the linebackers coach. So he brings a big defensive mind to this team, which I think is something that Seattle needs to work on, and hopefully they will with this kind of, especially with his experience in Baltimore. So he should, I'm just kind of concerned about what he's going to do with those weapons on offense with his defensive mind and never being a head coach before. Let's look at the roster really quick. Seattle needs to do something right now because they only have two rostered quarterbacks. We've obviously got Geno Smith, and they picked up Sam Howell. That's literally the only two quarterbacks they have in the roster. They have to pick up at least a third one. I don't know what they're going to do. They'll do something this summer. We obviously still have Kenneth Walker, Zach Charbonnet at running back. And then we've got, you know, Kenny McIntosh and George Hulani.
Uh-huh.
Wide receivers, we've got DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Jackson Smith and Jigba. Still got Jake Bobo and D. Eskridge. They picked up LaVisca Chenault, Tony's favorite player. And
my guy. Favorite player. Let's go.
They still got Aesop Winston, I believe was a rookie last year, and then a few other scrubs. At tight end, they messed up and they got rid of Colby Parkinson. They got rid of the cheese disease. They got rid of the cheese disease.
My God.
All right. Who is now Parkinson's on the Rams, right?
Yes.
Yes.
But they picked up someone to replace him. So as we all know, Colby Parkinson was like 6'7", like 260 or something. So they picked up a rookie this year, AJ Barner, who's like the same stature. He's like 6'6 or 6'7". Basically going to be used as a blocker this year. But they did get Noah Fant.
Wasn't he already a Seahawk before?
Yeah, he was in the Russ trade.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe he was, yeah, he was there last year.
I think they just keep trading him back and forth every year. Like, no, you have him. Like a divorce family.
And they also have Farrell Brown, who's like a 7 or 8 year veteran, mainly going to be used for blocking. But Noah Fant's going to be the main man for Geno Smith in the tight end position. I'm really excited because as I said, the head coach, Mike McDonald, is a very defensive mind head coach, which I think is going to translate more to them trying to run a lot more. They have the weapons. I mean, Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet is like really good 1-2 punch. Charbonnet didn't really get the numbers we were expecting last year because of Walker. Charbonnet only ended up with almost 300 yards on 71 attempts.
His efficiency was really good, though. Like, when you look at, like, his, like, per game breakdown, like, he was really good. It's just he doesn't have that breakaway speed.
Right? Yeah. And I think hopefully this offseason he worked with some coaches and just got in some time to try and become, because I honestly have a feeling if Walker goes down, Charbonnet can be the lead guy. And it was showcased. I mean, Walker played 15 games last year, so there was really only two games where Charbonnet had a chance to shine. Walker, what a beast. I mean, over 900 yards, 8 touchdowns, 219 attempts. He did run, let's see, he had 138 attempts against zone coverage and 6 touchdowns, and 75 versus man coverage and 2 touchdowns. So I really like Walker going into this year. He's going into what, this is his third season, right?
Correct.
So yep. I think this is going to be hopefully his career year, assuming he can stay healthy. We'll see. That means he's still got another year to play on his rookie contract. So he could negotiate next year, I would think, if he has over 1,000 yards this year and like 10 touchdowns, which is where I'm putting his prediction right now. I'll probably go in. I don't know if they've put the lines out on FanDuel yet for rushing yards or props. Have they yet, Tony? Have you looked?
I haven't seen anything.
But my prediction is for him to go over 1,000 this year and over 10 touchdowns.
Wow.
That's right. That's right. Because like I said, I think this defensive-minded coach is going to go back to more of a run-style game. They're going to try and do what they can receiving-wise. I mean, DK Metcalf, big man, had over 1,000 yards last year. Tyler Lockett's like 40 years old.
He's eternal, dude.
So DK obviously plays outside the most. He's, what was his, like 15%. He only played in the slot.
16.
Tyler Lockett was like 35 or 36% in the slot. And then who I really like in the slot is Jackson Smith and Jigba, who is going to, I don't think he's going to have as good as a year as DK, just because DK's has all those targets where he can just, Geno can put the ball somewhere and DK can just go up and muscle his way and grab it. But Jackson Smith and Jigba plays almost 70% out of the slot, which is going to be awesome for those inline slant route passes and shorter passes, where on Geno's going to get a lot of pressure. He was sacked like, I think like 31 or 32 times last year, which is not like, you know, Joe Burrow bad, but it's bad.
I got some good JSN stuff for you real quick.
Okay.
The offensive coordinator for Seattle this year is the guy that was the offensive coordinator for the Washington college team last year.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
JSN's ADOT in 2023 was 6.4 yards, so his average catch or his depth of target was 6.4 yards. Jalen McMillan was the slot receiver in Washington last year, and his ADOT was 9.6.
Wow.
So if JSN keeps up and keeps getting, what did he have? He had 90 targets last year.
He had a lot.
Yeah, if he gets up to 100 targets at a higher ADOT, we could be seeing like a real, real nice season for JSN.
Sure. Geno Smith, we'll talk about him really quick. I mean, he had a kind of an off year last year. I don't know what it was. I think it was just that he got paid. And that's just what happens when you pay quarterbacks.
He just became Geno Smith.
Yeah. I mean, he had a great year the year before that. And I think he's going to struggle to eclipse 4,000 yards this year. I think it'll all depend on game script. And when we go over the schedule in a little bit, we may get close to 4,000 or a little bit over 4,000, because their schedule, even though it's the like 7th or 8th easiest schedule based on winning percentage of opponents from last year, it could put them in a decent amount of like barn burner games where they're pretty close. Obviously, they got to play San Francisco twice and Arizona twice, but.
And the Rams.
That's true. And they're also scheduled to play 5 of the 6 teams who drafted a quarterback in the first round this year.
No shit.
Yeah, let's see. Chicago, Minnesota, Atlanta. Well, obviously, That guy's not gonna start. But
Michael Penis.
Denver, not New England. No.
Yeah. Or Washington.
Yeah. They do not play Washington this year. So yeah, that's five of the six. Yeah. Did it right, 20 touchdowns. What I really like though is that he only had 9 interceptions last year, so that's really good. He had a little over 3,600 yards. So maybe getting close to 4,000 would not be outside of the realm of possibility. But I think eclipsing 41 or 42 will only happen if the game script dictates a lot of close games. Yeah, why don't we just go into the schedule really quick? So the Seattle's going to – obviously, a lot of these West Coast teams, they have the highest, travel miles because of playing in the West Coast. Mm-hmm. They're the third most in terms of miles, the third most team this year. They're going to travel almost 26,000 miles, 25,797 miles this year. But the good thing about that is I think only like two of those games where they travel to the East Coast, I think five times. And I think only two of those games are in that like early schedule, the 12 o'clock start, so which would be 10 sure. o'clock Pacific.
Yeah.
And which is what really gets a lot of these West Coast teams is when they have to travel and then play at like what they're used to being like 10 a.m. Their time.
Sure.
So let's go really quick. Week one, they play Denver. I'm saying that's a win. What do you guys think?
Yeah, that's a win. It's gonna suck.
Here's my theory, right? Like, I honestly, I think Seattle has a weird vibe aura where I think Geno's going to fuck up and we're going to see more of Sam Howell than we anticipate.
And I'm all about it. I'm all about it.
You think like before or after the first half of the season?
Well, we'll go through the schedule and I'll call it where they switch.
Okay. All right. So I'm right now I'm going with a win against Denver and it the first game is in Seattle. Week two is when they travel to the East Coast. They're going to, Gillette Stadium. They're going to play at New England. I'm calling that a win, though, too.
That's a win.
It'd be close. It'd be dirty.
Week three, they're at home against Miami. I'm calling that a loss.
Yep.
Week
four. All right, Sam Howell time.
Maybe, no, probably after this game. All right, so week four, they travel again to the Eastern time zone. Not as bad, but they're going to Detroit. I'm calling that a loss.
See, I don't think, like, I think he will only get switched out if he has, like, an abysmal game, right? And then it's like I think they're anticipating to lose to those teams. Granted, teams shouldn't go into a mindset of we're going to lose, but, like, theoretically, on paper, the Lions should win the NFC this year, right? And the Dolphins can win the AFC, potentially, right? So,
sure.
If they start, falling to, the fucking Panthers, then yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. Week five, they're back at home against the Giants. I'm calling that a win.
Okay, if they lose to the Giants, he's fucking cut.
So yeah, that's probably the deciding factor right there. You're probably right, Shane. If somehow they lose to the Giants at home, yeah. Let's see what Sam Howell's got.
So I've got him so far at 3-2.
Then we go. We're still at home. We play Frisco. I'm calling that a loss.
L.
Then we travel again to the Eastern time zone. They're going to play at Atlanta. I'm got that as a loss.
I agree.
Shane, what do you think?
Yeah. I get bad vibes from the Falcons, I think it's a loss.
And then they come back for two more games. Week eight, they're playing Buffalo at home. I call that a loss.
Yep.
Week nine, at home against the Rams. I have that as a win. I have them splitting against the Rams.
They usually split when the Rams need it, right? When the Rams need that W, that's when Seattle collapses. So I definitely see that.
So I'm calling that a win. Week 10 is their bye. Week 11, they go to Frisco and play Frisco. I'm calling that a loss. I have them losing twice to Frisco this year. Quick little fact, 49ers have five straight wins against Seattle. I think that streak continues this year and they make it seven. Week 12, they travel down to Phoenix and play Arizona. I have that as a loss.
L.
Week 13, travel out back to the East Coast and play the Jets. I have that as a win.
Ooh, that's a loss for me, dog.
Okay.
Sam Howell, honestly, it's going to be three picks no matter who the quarterback is, but I think the Jets are going to beat him up.
Sure. I'm going with my narrative that Rodgers is not playing this game. So, I don't think he's playing more than six games. So, that's why I went with my Week 12 narrative there. Win. Week 14, they play Arizona. I'm calling that a win. I have them splitting with Arizona this year.
Yeah, I'm cool with that. I'm with that too.
Week 15, they're at home against Green Bay. I have that as a loss.
Yep.
Week 16, at home against Minnesota. I have that as a win.
I'll give it to them. JJ McCarthy's ass.
And week 17, they're going to Chi-Town to play Chicago. I have that as a loss.
That's like two losses in one. It's such a loss.
And then the last game of the year in LA against the Rams, I have that as a loss because I said they would split. And like Shane said, the Rams will probably need that win. So, so overall, I have them at, 7 and 10. And Tony, I think you have them at 6 and 11, right?
6 and 11.
So I put the over under at 7.5. Some other sportscasters I looked up. Let's see. Fox Sports has them at 7-10. Sports Illustrated has them at 6-11. NFL.com has them at 9-8. yeah, love it. Right. And 33rd team has them at 7-10. So overall, I think they have the weapons to do really good. And it wouldn't shock me if they got 9 wins this year. It would shock me if they got like 10 or 11 wins. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs unless it's some crazy-ass scenario.
The NFC just sucks.
yeah, and I don't think that'll happen in the NFC West. But So right now I have them at 7-10. And like I said, they got some weapons, but with this new head coach and new, Tony said, offensive coordinator, I think they're going to have too much to develop. And then who knows what's going to happen after this year. I think Lockett's gone after this year. Who knows, maybe even DK. And then they just go into a straight rebuild. So if they want to try doing some crazy-ass stuff, and who knows? You know what happens when you get, like, brand-new coaches and stuff? They try crazy-ass shit. Look what Dan Campbell did with Detroit the last couple of years, making all those crazy calls.
Look at how efficient Washington State was, though. Like, they had three receivers go in, like, the top 100, right? And Michael Penix got drafted at 8. Like, I'm not a big Penix believer, but, like, I think that offense was, like, very well constructed, where you have, like, Tyler Lockett being Jalen Polk, JSN being Jalen McMillan, and then DK Metcalf playing the Rome role, right? Like, it's basically, like, 1-to-1-to-1, and then they're just going to run the running backs how they did. Granted, the O-line isn't like elite like Washington's was, but like you said, their offense is there. It's just we have to see something on tape first. And it's honestly, I think it comes down to the quarterback position, because like the person piloting the ship isn't good. Right. So it's your scheme could be great, but if your quarterback is inconsistent, right, it's not conducive to like,
I think the narrative too for these guys too, which would be really be a good like a morale boost these first 2 weeks playing Denver and playing New England, might be a really good morale boost for this team and the head coach. But then they're gonna go play Miami and just get their asses whooped. But who knows? Who knows? We'll see. I got them at 7 wins, and that is, I think, all I have to say about the Seattle Seahawks.
I have I have some brief player takes I'd like to share. I think Geno Smith's going to end up a mid-tier QB2. I think he's like a, no one should be drafting Geno Smith. He's a streamer. If your guy's on a bye.
You think he ends up top 20?
Right around there. I could see quarterback 18 to quarterback 22 as being a reasonable
range of outcomes. Or you think he's outside of 20?
Nah, that sounds reasonable. I mean, like, he's not winning your weeks, but he's also not losing your weeks. So it's like, he's fine.
he's just going to be that consistent game manager, I think. And he'll have a couple really good games where he goes for over 300 yards for sure. I think what's going to happen is the 1-2 running back punch, they're going to just explode. Like, Walker's going to have over 1,000 yards. I hope Charbonnet gets over like 600 yards this year. It would just be awesome to see them dominate with their run game.
I just hope the line is decent enough to do that. That's just my concern.
Sure.
Did they
draft it in O-line?
No, they did. They picked a guard in the third.
Okay.
Yikes.
But, I mean, both of their tackles were good as rookies, but they both had spent a lot of time on injury, timeout. You're on timeout because you're hurt.
Yeah.
And, Ryan, their offensive coordinator has his own offensive line coach. And his name is Ryan Grubb with two B's.
Nice.
And he was a former hog farmer in Iowa.
Really?
Yeah, so that's some grown man shit.
I actually know someone with the last name of Grubb from Iowa. I wonder if they're related.
Reach out. Reach out, baby.
My brother's roommate in the city, her last name is Grubb, and she's Grubb. They met when my brother went to University of Iowa.
Hell yeah. I have DK Metcalf as a wide receiver 3 masquerading as a wide receiver 2 because his boom games make his overall numbers look better than they are on a week-to-week basis. I love JSN, and I don't care about Noah Fant.
Yeah, I think that's the big missing ticket. Is the tight end position this year. They're not going to get too much support from that outside of run blocking. So,
but they've never done that though, right? Like,
yeah, no. I guess you're right. Under Pete Carroll, they didn't really utilize the tight end very much. But we have a brand new coach, so you never know.
But he didn't use them either though, from what I remember, right? There was unless they had like a big talent discrepancy.
At Washington. Yeah. Who was that? Who was the tight end at Washington?
I think he ended up going real late. But like just like in Washington, I wrote down that Noah Fant, there's no way that unless there's some serious injuries, there's no way Noah Fant finishes any higher than 4th on the team in targets.
Yeah, and they have to throw the ball 700 times to have fantasy relevance, right?
Yeah.
So I'm the only Seahawk I'm in on at cost is JSN.
He's a good flex play, right? 7th, 8th round.
Yeah, I love it.
Do you have any exposure to him in Dynasty or anything?
I just traded my JSN thing before I started my research.
I did too. I traded him, Zay Flowers, and Michael Penix for Puka.
I think that's a good deal.
That's not bad.
It's 3 wide receiver, 3 flex. I need the fucking boom.
Bring it. All right, so that's Seattle. All right. We're going to pause your listening experience and then release the second part of this as a separate episode. So we'll see you on the other side.
Yeah.